On the Radar, an Eagle News program that takes you beyond the streets and brings you closer to national and international breaking news as it unfolds. Tune in every Monday to Friday from 1 to 2:30.
A very good afternoon, Namibia. It's Monday, the 28th of April, 2025. And just like that, a brand new week is here. Now, whether you're starting it with a strong cup of coffee, a focused mindset, or just taking it slow, here's to fresh energy and new beginnings. Now, Mondays may get a tough reputation, but they also bring a clean state across the country of offices are in motion, plans are being set, and people are getting back into the rhythm of the week. Now it's all about resetting, refocusing, and stepping forward with intention. If you're easing into your workplace behind the wheel, or simply catching your breath after the weekend, take it one task at a time. Now pace yourself, stay hydrated, and remember, progress is better than perfection. Now as always, On the Radar is right here with you, your trusted companion for real-time stories, thoughtful insights, and everything in between. I'm your host, Ndafa Happy Juju, and we've got you covered with the latest from across Namibia and beyond. That is from social shifts to economic moves, community voices to continental headlines. We're live every weekday from 1300 hours to 1430 right here on your favorite radio station, Eagle FM. And hey, like I always say, it's not just a show, it's a conversation. So if you got something on your mind, call on studio number 083-288-401. Remember, would love to hear from you and how your Monday is going and what's up on the radar this week. Now, here's to a strong, smooth start. Happy Monday, Namibia. Let's make it count. Now let's dive into today's top stories. The Deputy Minister of Agriculture, Fisheries and Marine Resources, Ruth Masake, outlined a sustainability-driven vision for Namibia's fishing industry during her keynote address at the annual fishing industry gathering held at Atlantic Hotel in Walvis Bay on Friday, April 25. Now, speaking just one day after President Netumbo Nandi-Ndaitwah's first State of the Nation address, Masake reaffirmed the ministry's commitment to transforming Namibia's marine resources into tangible socio-economic gains, particularly for the country's youth and vulnerable populations. Echoing the national theme of unity in diversity, natural resources, beneficiation, and youth empowerment for sustainable development, Masake emphasized that fisheries must play a central role in job creation, food security, and industrialization. We are fully aware of growing concerns about diminishing fish stocks. This issue threatens not only the sustainability of the ministry, but also the livelihoods that depend on it, Masake said. She announced the ministry's intent to implement a science-based national strategy to preserve marine ecosystems and protect the industry's future. Key measures will include enhanced stock assessment, expansion of marine protected areas, seasonal closures and moratoriums, and tighter enforcement to combat illegal, unreported, and unregulated fishing. Masake called for collective action, stressing that the success of this approach would depend on collaboration between government, industry, researchers, civil society, and regional partners. Now, with fish serving as both a top export commodity and a critical source of nutrition, Masake acknowledged that many Namibians still cannot afford to consume fish regularly. In response, the ministry will focus on scaling up inland fisheries and aquaculture, implementing targeted subsidies and regional distribution schemes, and promoting innovative processing techniques to reduce waste and extend shelf life. Recognizing mounting pressure on marine environments from mining, energy exploration, and maritime transport, Masake said the ministry will be guided by a forthcoming Blue Economic Governance Framework designed to balance development with sustainability. This framework will promote integrated marine planning, environmental safeguards, and cross-sector collaboration. The Deputy Minister was particularly vocal about tackling Namibia's high youth unemployment rate, currently over 44%, stating that the fishery sector must rise to the occasion. We will promote onshore processing and value addition to extend job creation beyond the sea, she stated, adding that the ministry will invest in training, technology transfer, and SME support while empowering women and youth cooperatives. Let's now hear what she had to say in person.
Privileged to stand before you on behalf of Honorable Mark Albert Hangare, Minister of Agriculture, Fishery, Water and Land Reform. I deliver this important address on his behalf today due to the other national obligation, and the Minister has delegated me to convene his thoughts and ministry vision for this beautiful or good sector. I thank him for his trust, and though I was introduced by the director of proceeding today, to introduce myself a little bit, my name is well cleared or outlined by the MC of the event. I am Ruth Masake. Recently, I've been appointed being a deputy minister for this very important ministry. I'm deeply committed to fostering a productive and collective relationship between you. So as I look into this room today, I'm so overwhelmed because there's no space being left. You have received a call. That makes me to realize that this sector is very much important. It's about our life. I am deeply committed to fostering a productive and collaborative relationship with you. As I mentioned earlier on, our visions, stakeholders, and playing my part in achieving the development goals of our country through this very important industry. Our president, Her Excellency Dr. Netumbo Nandi-Ndaitwa, in her maiden speech on the State of National Address yesterday, emphasized the urgency of translating national resources into socio-economic dividends, particularly for our youth and vulnerable communities. The theme is unity in diversity, natural resources, beneficiation, and youth empowerment for sustainable development. That's youth unemployment stands at 44% at this moment. The fishing sector must rise to the occasion as a driver of decent work and industrialization. We will promote onshore processing and value addition to extend to job creation beyond the sea. Invest in training, technology, transfer, and SME support. Support women and young-owned cooperatives, and empower all the fisheries industry. Let me emphasize one point again. The success of this ambition depends on the partnerships with you. I said you are very much important. The industry leaders, community representatives, researchers, and regional, not forgetting international partners, together we must co-develop an industrial-led action plan to meet sustainability targets, joint investment platform for research, training and infrastructure, real-time feedback mechanism to track the process and resolve the bottlenecks. As I take up my duty in the ministry, I wish to assure you that my office remains open to your ideas, concerns, and collaboration. I look forward to working with you closely in all stakeholders involved in a guided platform by the President's call for the unity of resources, beneficiation, and youth empowerment. So the door is open. The platform is there. We have 2 ED in the ministry. The channel need to be followed. My office is 24 hours open for you people. Let us make Namibia special beacon of blue prosperity, where sustainability, equity, and opportunity go hand in hand with working together, with teamwork. We believe we can deliver together. We can strive together. So my people, thank you very much.
The industry is therefore disturbed about how the governmental quotas issue is being handled.
Chairperson of the Federation of Namibia Fishing Association, Mati Amkwa, speaking also at the annual fishing industry, had this to say.
Which we raised with the ministry and are still outstanding. The industry is puzzled by fishing in the 200 isobar by a selected few under the pretext of research operation. The operation took 2 years and it has now been extended for another 6 months. This operation raised some of the following questions which needs answers. 1. What is being researched? 2. Why are the commercial vessels being used instead of the ministry's research vessels? 3. What informed the granting of the extension? Where are the previous results? What are the findings? What are the criteria was used to select these companies over the others? We all know that this is a breeding ground which we don't need to tamper with. We need to act and manage this resource responsibly for the future generation. We are only custodians of today. Illegal fishing. It is of great concern that illegal fishing on the horse mackerel and other species is still taking place in the waters of our northern coast. The fish caught illegally in our waters competes in the same markets with products from our legitimate fishing companies and exerts downward pressure on prices achieved. The total fish landed through illegal activities are unknown and is therefore not captured, and it compromises the calculations of the TAC. Honorable Deputy Minister, the industry through its respective association is looking forward to a closer working relationship with the ministry where not only acknowledgement but also constructive discussions takes place and where actions as may be needed are implemented. Hereby, we firmly commit to collaborate and assist as and where possible to advance fisheries towards a sustainable future for all. As I had mentioned earlier, we are a team. We are both rowing the same boat. It is known that successful rowing requires coordination, cooperation, and communication. Let's now row together for the benefit of our nation. And I thank you. We are therefore looking forward to continue holding hands in working together to manage our resource responsibly. We stand ready to work and give you our full support in order to master and navigate through the challenges that our industry is facing. Once again, congratulations. We wish you all the best on your appointment and look forward to a long, lasting, and successful working relationship. Agriculture and fisheries are second and third respectively in contributing to our GDP. This fact in itself is an indication how huge are the responsibility on your shoulder. With agriculture, you have to deal with green skin, land to resettle people, water to make sure that the rural areas are having water, and fisheries, managing the resource responsibly for the future generation. All great tasks indeed that will require effort and commitment from all stakeholders involved. Honorable Deputy Minister, we are all playing for the same team, Team Namibia. There should be not them and us. Division has been unfortunately very present in our sector and needs to be addressed. When playing as a team, every player has a responsibility and all play together. If one player doesn't bring his or her side, then it's not that player who will lose, but the whole team. Therefore, we look forward to hold regular consultation meetings to always keep an open and effective communication and to cooperate with you and your officials as the winning formula to succeed. Deputy Honorable Minister, I hope you agree with me that all right holders are equal before the law, and they should be treated as such. Unfortunately, this has not been always the case. Preference treatment of right holders create unnecessary tension that have a potential to destabilize the industry. Let's do away with the idea that some right holders are more equal than others. As an industry, we have a list of issues which we raised with the ministry and are still outstanding. Comrade Deputy Minister, these issues need your attention. I will only touch on some of them, and the rest can be dealt with at various subsector level of consultation. Licensing of fishing vessels. All fishing processes start with the vessel licensing. Without that, no catches take place, and then there is no processing and value addition, no offshore and onshore. Industry literally come to a standstill. Hence, it's necessary to continue supplying consistently the raw material to the processing facilities. Delaying licensing is costly to the companies, and fishing days are also being lost by the respective right holders. In this regard, we are therefore pleading with the ministry to always facilitate process timelessly to avoid unnecessary delays. Scorecard. The industry needs predictable quota allocation system to all right holders based on their employment, investment, and performance within certain transparent and measurable parameters. The Namibian fishing industry is an industrialized, capital-intensive industry with right holders and operators having invested many billion dollars in catching, processing, and cold store facilities, and who need to plan their fishing and processing activities in such a way as to catch throughout the year and provide the market with a steady flow of product. Industry and the Ministry of Fisheries and Marine Resources have been working on and in principle agreed to a scorecard to be used in allocation of the TAC. What remains to be done is given to the scorecard categories awaiting. Industry is standing to ready to engage the ministry urgently on finalizing the scorecard in such a way that employment and investment in the industry is rewarded, and any trading in quotas by right holders is penalized and brought under control. Governmental objective quotas. The Marine Resource Act is very clear on the provision made on governmental objectives. The purpose is for emergency outbreaks only.
You are tuned into On the Reader News Bulletin. We pause here now for a commercial break, but we'll be back with more news. So stay with us right here on the Reader.
Did you know that in Namibia, over 1.4 million people use their mobile device to access the internet? So why not meet your current and potential customers where they already are? With over 600,000 cumulative users around the world, between the Eagle FM and Imba mobile apps, Eagle Media House has the perfect digital platforms for you to advertise your business, upcoming events, weddings, vacancies, funerals, or any other announcement that you have on their digital billboards in their mobile applications. Put your ad on our digital billboards, and with one tap of the screen, lead users directly to an address of your choosing. For more information, contact Hende at 081-410-9077. That's 081-410-9077.
Welcome back. In some economic and energy news, the Namibia International Energy Conference, NIEC 2025, has officially concluded, wrapping up on 4 days of high-level discussions, strategic networking, and bold commitments toward shaping Namibia's energy future. Held in Windhoek, the conference brought together local and international leaders, including government officials, global investors, industry experts, and innovators, all focused on unlocking opportunities in Namibia's growing energy sector. This year's event was especially significant following the country's recent oil and gas discoveries and increased global interest in renewable energy and green hydrogen. Delegates discussed everything from energy security and sustainability to infrastructure investment and regional cooperation. Let's now listen to Nda Puilamo Selma Chimotukeni, CEO of Reach Africa.
This discovery reinforces the belief that Namibia's future in the global energy landscape is bright, and that strategic partnerships, responsible development, and national capacity building must continue to guide our journey. Another major takeaway is that companies have already begun advancing local content efforts. Many are training Namibians, partnering with local firms, ensuring real commitment to Namibia's broader development goals. But we know that to fully deliver on this promise, we need a phased approach to local content that evolves with the industry, one that aligns with national objectives, responds to changing needs, and creates real opportunities across the entire value chain. Human capital development must remain central to our approach. Education, training, and capacity building are critical to unlocking long-term benefits, not just for today's projects, but for generations to come. We've also heard loud and clear that Namibia must become self-reliant in energy, and this calls for a concerted effort in infrastructure development. The foundation must be strong if the structure is to stand. At the same time, there was a clear call from across the discussions for certainty and clarity on the way forward. Certainty in policy, clarity in processes, and consistency in regulatory frameworks. These elements are vital to maintaining investor confidence, accelerating project timelines, and ensuring that Namibia remains a competitive and attractive destination for energy investment. As we accelerate our energy ambitions, we were reminded that our energy mix is not just a vision, it's also a policy. Therefore, we must continue to leverage our renewable energy resources while recognizing the strategic role of critical metals in enabling the global energy transition. Namibia has both, and that is a unique position of strength. We also recognize that the private sector's essential role is not only in capital and operations, but in innovation, skills transfer, and delivering long-term impact. Partnerships are at the core of what we are building. Namibia's energy story is part of Africa's energy story. Therefore, regional collaboration and integration remain key, and our actions must contribute to the continent's collective energy security. As we drive this transformation, we must also ensure that women, youth, and communities are not left behind. They must be included and empowered. A just transition must be an inclusive one. We live here today more informed, more connected, and more aligned. And as always, it takes a village. As we close, it is important to reflect on the broader message from Her Excellency's maiden State of the Nation address, which she gave yesterday. And I just want to highlight what she said about the energy sector. So to quote her, she says that the oil and gas sector holds the potential to transform our economy in the next 5 years. This new industry will require close monitoring, hence her decision to place it in the presidency as she looks to nurture its potential for the benefit of Namibians. To gain maximum benefit from the industry, the oil refinery is part of her program. She further declared that her administration will place unwavering focus on ensuring that Namibia achieves first oil production within the shortest time frame. That the government will accelerate strategic partnerships, streamline regulatory processes, and invest in critical infrastructure to unlock the full potential of our hydrocarbon resources. This milestone will not only fuel the country's energy security, but also drive rural and peri-urban electrification, job creation, local capacity development, and sustainable growth for generations to come. I believe these words are a call for action.
And now, with that being said, we pause here to leave room for commercial break, but shortly we'll be back before you know it. To stay tuned and also dial in on studio, that's on 083-288-401 to share your contributions and opinions right here on the Reading News Bulletin.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Olio mnangeshefa no hara kushigifa oma kuro e kupitira mohori ke radio station ayo Eagle FM. Enya mukuro olongaha. Ninge kwa tafano na Monica kushikondo sheipindi kono raheta tuimwe, heali imwe, ne heali, imwe imwe no hamano. That is 0817147116. Mamberewa kono raheta tu natu, mbali o heta tu vatatu, ne nola no natu. Nenge tumo emaila monica@eaglefm.com.na opomone oshijemo shiri nawa.
Taking flights has never been easier. Paratus is introducing SkyFi internet packages with speeds that will have you reaching for your seatbelts, starting from $500 excluding VAT per month, with speeds reaching up to 10 megabits per second. There's even a prepaid option where you can top up your SkyFi internet for just $15 per gigabyte. No contracts, no fuss. Visit your nearest Paratus branch to find out more, or go to paratus.africa/Namibia to sign up online. Always
Paratus. Welcome back. Monday's edition of the e-paper is out, and this Monday presents a fresh new pack of socio-economic news covering the following headlines. Mining sector pumps over $24 billion into the local economy. Quota auctions raise red flags in the fishing sector. Unsettled debts threaten local infrastructure growth, warns James Sakwasa. NACC says free tertiary education unlikely to disrupt Competition Commission for now. Netumbona Ndindaitwa vows support for investigations into triple murders of girls. Want to stay ahead of the curve with the latest social and economic news? Well, subscribe to the Eagle Media House WhatsApp channel and receive a tri-weekly dose of economic, social, and community news absolutely free of charge, delivered right in your mobile. Now just send a text message to 081-200-4144 and never miss an update. Eagle Media House, where we keep you informed. In a powerful display of its commitment to conservation and global collaboration, Namibia's Ultimate Safaris has completed its third consecutive international guide exchange, investing over 300,000 into the initiative since its inception. Now this year, Jason Nangola, named Ultimate Safaris 2024 Ultimate Guide of the Year, embarked on a three-week conservation and cultural immersion in Banga, California, Mexico, hosted by Todos Santos Eco Adventures. The initiative promotes cross-cultural learning and conservation leadership by exchanging expert guidance between continents. This guide, SWIPE initiative, is a great opportunity for interaction and learning between people on different sides of the world who may have differing geographies, wildlife and weather, but who share the same dedication to conservation and community, said Tristan Clowley, who is the co-founder and managing director of Ultimate Safaris. Jason's journey took him from Namibia's arid Damaraland landscapes to Mexico's rich marine ecosystems. There he engaged in activities such as snorkeling, scuba diving, whale watching, and even learning local crafts like leather making from cactus. Now, one of the most impactful moments, he said, was witnessing four different whale species, blue, humpback, thin, and gray, something he described as awe-inspiring. Now, imagine Damaraland with an ocean, Jason reflected. Being a guest, not a guide, helped me understand how our guests must feel. It was a humbling and eye-opening experience. Beyond the natural encounters, Jason also explored Mexico's vibrant local culture and cuisine, which inspired him to consider new ways of incorporating Namibia's own cultural heritage and food traditions into the guest experience. Now, the exchange also allowed Jason to reconnect with Mexican guide Alex Herrera, who had previously visited Namibia under the same program. Later this year, another Mexican guide will travel to Namibia to continue the exchange, strengthening the growing relationship between the two companies and their shared mission of conservation and community upliftment. This initiative, jointly driven by Ultimate Safaris and Todos Santos Eco Adventures, stands as a model for global ecotourism partnerships, merging conservation, cultural respect, and professional growth into one powerful program. We caught up with Jason Nangola on his Virgia experience. Let's take a listen to that conversation. Good afternoon, Jason Nangola, and welcome to On the Radar News Bulletin.
Hi, good afternoon, Happy.
Now, you were named Ultimate Safaris 2024 Ultimate Guide of the Year and recently embarked on a three-week conservation and cultural immersion in Baja, California, Mexico. How was that experience for you?
The Baja exchange was amazing. It was very, very different from home. It's all the way on the other side of the world, so there's so much one can take away from it, but in a nutshell, it was amazing.
Mm. Now, how did the marine ecosystems of Baja California compare to Namibia's desert landscapes in terms of biodiversity and conservation challenges?
Firstly, I mean, there's nothing like home. So home will always be home. But with, the experience in Baja and, looking at the conservation challenges that they face in comparison to us, yeah, it's a whole different landscape as much as it's very similar. In terms of, yes, we are on the Atlantic Ocean, which is influenced by the Benguela Current. So our waters is very murky, rough and cold. Mm-hmm. And then they are on the other side of the Pacific Ocean, which is, of course, on the Gulf Stream. It's much different. Also slightly warmer. So their challenges is more of marine life, and where we face with challenges of, you know, desert adapted animals and trying to find a balance between human and wildlife interactions, and of course to try to mitigate human wildlife conflicts.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned being a guest and not a guide helped shift your perspective. Now, can you elaborate more on how that changed your approach to guiding?
So Like I was saying, so if you look at what they focus on in the Baja is, of course, marine activities, doing coral reefs, restorations, looking at all of these marine life, you know, whether you're going snorkeling or scuba diving. So all of this was very, very different for me. And that was probably what was amazing about it, because it's an unfamiliar environment that you're not used to. And a lot of the time as guides, we sort of get immersed in our own world.
Mm-hmm.
And we forget that, you know, from a guest perspective, it's very, very different. You know, when you are seeing something for the first time,
yeah,
it's very, very different from myself, for example, that I have seen desert adapted elephants, I don't know how many times now.
Yeah.
So being a guest and being in the Baja and doing all of these activities that are out of my comfort zone, and of course, doing these things that I wouldn't have normally been exposed to, it's different. So it gives you a different perspective and understanding that when guests are coming to Namibia, it is their first time in Namibia or in Africa.
Mm.
And that itself comes with, you know, it's like a child with a new toy. It's something new. It's something exciting. So it just gave me another view sitting on the other side, not guiding, not taking a lot of the things that I probably have seen so many times for granted. And also, you know, learning to explain things in a much more simpler way.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes, you know, we get very technical and we could easily lose guests with technical terms. So that was sort of being on the other side of the coin, and then seeing how the knowledge would be absorbed, just seeing how the experience would be absorbed.
Mm. And with that being said, what other ideas are you bringing back to Namibia that you'd like to implement in your guiding practice, you know, so that you think other guiders should adopt as well?
So in the Baja, the one thing that they really very prideful about is culture. They very much incorporate culture. I mean, of course, they speak Spanish, so that's a big thing. Cuisine is very, very... It's very, very Mexican.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas back home, I think our cuisine has sort of been influenced from everywhere in the world. A lot of Italian, German, and a bit of Namibian infused dishes. So I think one thing that we can take away and can try to really, really, dive deeper into our culture. We have a very diverse, culture in Namibia. And just to ensure that we also then make that a priority to ensure that the guests understand the diversity of the country and not just landscape and animals. Whereas, they focus more on the cultural aspect, especially the cuisine. Not to say that we don't do or focus on culture,
yeah,
but we just don't do it as much and as deep as we should.
Mm.
Yeah.
Interesting. Just how important do you think international collaboration is for the future of conservation and ecosystem, Jason? And furthermore, also, do you think more African tourism companies should adopt similar exchange programs, perhaps for the benefit and the educational well-being and knowledge building of their guides?
So from the conservation perspective, all of these collaborations with either other parts of the world is very important, because there's always something to learn, and there's always something to take away from the whole experience.
Mm.
And of course, travel in general just opens up your mind and opens up your thinking. I think a lot of the time we get absorbed in our sort of four corners or into our worlds, that we forget that there's a bigger world out there and that face different challenges, and you could then take away from these challenges and how they mitigate some of these challenges around the world.
Mm-hmm.
To give you an example, in the Baja, they're currently restoring coral reefs in the ocean. So, and that's, as much as we don't do that, we don't have that in some parts of the world, but the way and how they've incorporated that into becoming a tourist activity, but also to ensure that conservation is the forefront. So those type of things is collaborative efforts between tourism and conservation, and trying to ensure that we then are able to link the two and not basically treat them like two separate entities. So tourism, yes, is definitely a collaborative effort that should be incorporated into conservation. So regards to other companies doing this, I think it is a good program. It does, of course, help with a general knowledge of guiding, and also it just gives you a different view on how to explain things. So I spent a lot of time with marine biologists while I was in Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
So just, you know, looking at it from their perspective and, you know, getting more technical information about the marine life, that was quite useful. And just how they treat tourism and how that has also become a very important part of the economy. And that is always something to take away from. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Interesting. Jason, thank you so much for making time for us right here on the Reading News Bulletin.
Ah, no, your worries. All right.
Okay. And there you had it from Jason Nangola, who is an ultimate safari tour guide. Now we pause here and take a trip to the marketplace. We still have yet more news coming your way, so stay tuned.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Stay connected with Eagle FM, news without borders. Now, Eagle FM is everywhere, always on and always accessible. Whether you're commuting, working, or relaxing at home, simply plug in your earphones and stay informed with minimal inconvenience. Our platform delivers real-time news and analysis straight to your mobile phone, keeping you in the know wherever you are. In partnership with our sister e-paper, The Villager, we provide concise expert summaries of Namibia's latest business, economic, and policy developments, delivered digitally every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. It's your essential brief to start the week informed and stay ahead. Now, whether you're looking to grow your business reach, our complimentary apps, including the Imba mobile app and the Eagle FM app, offer targeted opportunities for companies to increase visibility of their products and services across a wide spectrum of consumers, from urban professionals to rural communities. And let's not forget, all social media platforms are among the most active in the country, giving brands, startups, and individuals the perfect place to amplify their visibility and connect with engaged audiences in real time. Eagle FM, the eye.
Olium nangeshifa noahara kushivifa oma kuro yo kupitira mohorike radio station yo Eagle FM. Enya mukuro olongaha. Ninge kwatafano na Monica kushikondosha ipindi konorahita tuimwe, heali imwe, ne heali, imwe imwe no hamano. That is 0817147116.
Onkundana ombwanawa kani hauto. Owapumbwa oshimaliwa meendelelo, ndele ouna oshiendiso. Ouna aniilonga yapumbwa okufutwa, ashike mboka yina oondjo dhoye otayeende kashona. Ngele onkalamwenyo otayi nyengana, AutoCash otayi ningi ompu. Tu etela ohauto yoye eto pewa epresenda 45 dhongushu yoshiendiso shoye, muule ashike weminitetilo 45. Ino pumbwa oka payslip nenge o statement yombaanga, ohauto yoye ashike. Mona omula, oshimaliwa ethimbo weshi pumbwa.
Easy money.
Tu dengela nena ko 0 5 0 0 5 7 ano ko 0 5 0 0 5 7. Oshipulela ko AutoCash.
Welcome back. Now, during her State of the National Address, President Netumbo Nandi-Ndaitwah revealed that the Namibian government continues to strengthen its support for vulnerable citizens through key grant programs. Currently, the disability grant is benefiting 58,087 individuals across the country. Meanwhile, the Orphans and Vulnerable Children OVC grant supports an impressive 375,765 children. the child disability grant has seen a major increase, rising from $350 Namibian to $1,600 Namibian. Now, this adjustment reflects the government's ongoing commitment to improving the quality of life for children living with disabilities and supporting families in need. Now, why is this important and what does it say to the people living with disabilities? To answer this question, let's talk to Joseph Shehama. Good afternoon, Joseph Shehama, and welcome to On the Radar News Bulletin.
Good afternoon, Zuzu.
Now, the president has announced that during the State of the Nation address that the child disability grant has increased from $350 Namibian to $1,600 Namibian. Now, Joseph, what does this mean for families caring for children with disabilities in Namibia?
It's a good news. If you take that 351.6, but if you look at the inflation, that amount is not enough. And that is why I believe that is a good news, but at the end of the day, people with disabilities, I think what the government needs to do is that is to categorize them, to put some of them who are able to work and some of them who are not able to work. So now, then obvious, those who are able to work, I don't say they must not get anything, but what I'm saying is that, employment opportunities is more important for me than, always just increase the disability grant, even for those people that, they have the capacity to work.
Now, considering that children with disabilities often require full-time care, how do you think this increase or this grant will help elevate the financial burden on families who may have to actually leave their employment in order to care for this ones, for the little ones?
I don't want to be seen that we are ungrateful, but one has to be realistic.
Yeah.
So 1,600.
Mm-hmm.
And let me talk about this much. The children with disabilities.
Mm.
So these people, they need the support. Yeah. Like for instance, so increase in the cost of living. So this person needs also to eat. And also the other thing is that we talk about the basic, like, the health, for instance. This person need to pay the transport. So how much is the person, paying the transport maybe, a day, if maybe this person is a school goer, and then so on.
Yeah.
So, for me, the 1,600, looking at especially the children with disabilities, it is not enough. So the cost of living is very high.
Mm.
So, and I think is that want to be objective and want to be realistic. Just go and look at the inflation. Then obvious, or just take 1,600 and you go and shop or shop right, pick and pay, so on. So how many items that you are going to buy with 1,600?
Mm-hmm.
And also on the other hand, some children, who are living with disabilities, some of them, they need a special care, for instance. So, for me, it is not enough. And I don't want to say we are not, we are ungrateful,
yeah.
But realistically, it is not enough.
I hear you. Now, Joseph Shehama, we often speak about inclusivity when we're talking about people or children living with disability. What exactly does inclusivity entail? I've heard you mention about those who are able to work if they could be afforded an opportunity for employment. But now, in terms of inclusivity when it comes to people or children with disability, what exactly does that entail?
It's very straightforward. So you mean that to include it in everyone, let me say, so people with disabilities, they have also the abilities to be included, like in plus, for instance, so they can also become the cabinet of the ministers.
Yeah.
So they can also be integrated in the economic system. But when I'm saying that integrated, I mean that they can also work. And please, when I'm talking about work, I'm not talking about filing. I'm not talking about, this stumble thing. I'm thinking about that we have to include people's disabilities in a decision-making position.
Mm-hmm.
So not in a low position and not just to tell everyone that, yes, you comply with Affirmative Action Act, but honestly, you have people only with disabilities who are maybe just filing or maybe making coffee. That is not work. I'm talking about a position of influence. The position where this person can make a decision. So, if it's in a cabinet, it's where this person has influence that, look, we have to come up, we have to empower the people with disabilities. And, that thing we are not seeing. So, and that is why people with disabilities, to be honest with you, if you look at a cabinet, if you look at the EB, for instance, I don't think there's somebody with disabilities. If you look at most of the senior position in the government, so and the government are the ones that need to lead. So to give example to the private sector.
Yeah.
So if the government is not applying the concept of inclusivity, so then obvious, how do the government expect the private sectors to do that? So, mm-hmm. so that's the thing that our government needs to look at, or to include our brothers and sisters with disabilities in the economic system.
Mm, I hear you. Now, just on the 25th of April edition mm-hmm. of the Villager newspaper stated that Elua Special School in Ongwediva will make agriculture a core skill for its learners by 2026. Now, Joseph, why are initiatives like this so very important for this community?
Oh yes. So that is a very I must actually comment this decision and so on, especially this initiative. But once again, and when you talk about the agricultural, so agricultural is they are different. Maybe I'm not sure is it a technician or are the people that's only going to work in agriculture, like collecting, harvest, or maybe planting, and so on.
Yeah.
So that's the thing that we also need to understand. Because I will not be happy. So to see that, okay, it's fine. The able bodies, they can also come and help us, or they can go and help them.
Mm-hmm.
So, but the bottom line is it. So we need also to make sure that, yes, we are bringing in the able bodies because obviously the able bodies need to be there. So when we are bringing the other person, we must not try to suppress or to push the other people just to be just to harvest, for instance, or just to plant. No.
Mm-hmm.
So we need these people also to understand this, that okay. So where can we sell our product, for instance?
Mm.
So yeah. So they need to be part of the decision making and not for somebody to decide for them. So that is the thing that I want to see.
Okay. Quite interesting. Joseph Sharma, thank you so much for always sharing your insights with us right here on the Reader News Bulletin.
Excellent.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And there you had it. Remember, you can also partake in the news bulletin right here on the Reader. Our studio line is open. 083-288-401 is the studio number. For now, we pause here and take a trip to the marketplace.
Did you know that in Namibia, over 1.4 million people use their mobile device to access the internet? So why not meet your current and potential customers where they already are? With over 600,000 cumulative users around the world, between the Eagle FM and Imba mobile apps, Eagle Media House has the perfect digital platforms for you to advertise your business, upcoming events, weddings, vacancies, funerals, or any other announcement that you have on their digital billboards in their mobile applications. Put your ad on our digital billboards and with one tap of the screen, lead users directly to an address of your choosing. For more information, contact Hende at 081-410-9077. That's 081-410-9077.
In other news, the Mukwe constituency in Kavango East region held its belated Independence Day celebrations over the weekend at the Hambukushu Traditional Authority Sports Ground. Now, the event featured colorful cultural performances, including traditional dances and songs, showcasing the community's vibrant heritage. In his address, Mukwe Constituency Councillor Damien Mahambai highlighted the importance of collaboration between the private sector and the government to address the region's pressing socio-economic challenges. Now, delivering his keynote address, Minister of Urban and Rural Development James Ankwasa announced plans to renovate Mukwe Tribal Office. They directed the constituency councillor to submit a detailed cost estimated for the project to ensure the renovations proceed without delay. The celebrations brought together community members, traditional leaders and various stakeholders, fostering a shared spirit of unity and development. Let's now hear from the councillor Damien Mahambai.
Ms. Mendai, she can also attest to that. The much-awaited, anticipated Shamaturu Clinic today is a state of the art. It is completed and operational. We have Rashama Fukumaya, and the constructions of critical roads such as the Andara Shamaturu and the Divundu Muhembo roads. I'm not just saying this. Those that are coming from Botswana, I think we have seen what is happening. And those are the development we are talking about. We have also made strides in telecommunications, despite challenges that we are facing with contractors. Kenyaga Kangongo ne gotawa wao ne got awarded this tender, because the tender completion date was supposed to be September last year, and we are still struggling. The constructions of new schools and classrooms. I'm here also with the Circuit Inspector of Education, Mukwe Circuit, and other stakeholders in education. We have done quite a lot. We have even gone to an extent to get private people fishing quotas. I can see Mr. Mnyoka is also smiling, because they are the one who made sure that we constructed a school at Mwichiku. We just called to the Minister of Education and say we want to come and construct that school, because we have the money, we have the stakeholder that loves education. And the implementation of various community projects. Yesterday, I took one of the media to Mfinduko. Mamona Mfinduko? Kwadi project ana kutendao mkuru kuya. Tawana 3 million environmental investment fund. Weyamuka media suna kapire katoa ya pano inga kama unako. Naima kuimo ni ma newspaper. The many services and project rendered and implemented by our Divundu Village Council, whose efforts continue to bring positive change to our communities. Doro pave to the Divundu, to my comrade, my brother. Oh, he's not here. As people at the grassroots level. Tonight, to Merakarthu Kumashine, Minister Wetu Sankwasa, Kadibura Shango Mnika, for his continued support to Mukwe's development and of gracing this celebration with his presence. Fumu Wetu, let us not only look back with pride, but also look forward with determination. Let us strengthen our resolve to build prosperous an inclusive future for Mukwe constituency and for all Namibians. I call upon the private sector to work hand in hand with the government to tackle complex challenges, and I encourage the public officials to deepen their engagement with remote and underserved areas to be better understand and address the needs of our people. Lastly, or in conclusion, I would also like to take this opportunity to thank our newly elected first ever female president, Dr. Netumbo Nandi Ndaitwa, Mkando Erepenae, a plot where they were going to construct a 10-hectare sport ground.
This sport field will comprise of soccer, netball, rugby, baseball, volleyball, tennis, a lot. Ato kurapela to makanza shushane diango ke constituency akona karno stadium okukuma ku 10 hectare. Esimumanda hand night apa kekengi. Wati wani kadwa karo no mubeke kupwa ka wana mube. Dinaro dia arosh ne fu motunga nae ne kwa dipano. Hata village council nao kwa dipano. Mumanda hamena kona kutapa. Manda. Munipe akutendere kukayaka pare makawande kwa Christine Mboma au.
Speaking at the same event at the late independence celebration in the Mukwe constituency this weekend, Urban and Rural Development Minister James Sankwasa has condemned the rising trend of tribal disputes being settled through legal courts. Sankwasa expressed his disappointment over the increasing use of courts to resolve chairmanship succession issues within tribes. He called this development a new phenomenon and an uncultured way of selecting new chiefs following the death of a tribal leader. Sankwasa questioned what had happened to traditional, customary and cultural practices and criticized the adoption of Western approaches to leadership succession, asking why black communities are often subjected to such foreign methods.
Leadership succession in this country. Chieftainship is not being sought through legal courts. People go to court to be declared chiefs or traditional leaders. Since when does European discuss for Africa? How do you going to get your chieftainship from the court and see, I'm in charge of my tribe or in charge of my people? When your people did not elect you, they did not nominate you, you went to court. What has happened to our cultural norms, our traditional norms, our way of doing things in Africa? What has gone wrong? Is it because government has started paying the leaders? Then now everybody wants a salary. Should we stop the salaries and go back to public service where our traditional leaders were paid and honored by their own communities through contributions? Because the way we are going at the moment is very worrisome. We have traditional authorities without a traditional leader, without a chief, for over 10 years. And you wonder what pleases people that are disputing in such a situation. So in the succession race, we shall go and handle it traditionally, not courts. As a Minister of Urban and Rural Development, responsible for traditional authorities, we shall use the culture, customs and traditions to resolve all our disputes, not courts. We have to resort back to our elders to tell us how did they do it in the past. This is how we want to do it today. We have that duty. And that's the direction we have already taken. In that direction, we have already resolved the Masubia traditional authority dispute using culture, not courts. The matter that was in the High Court has been withdrawn right now. And we are going to do the same. If you find yourself that you are claiming to want to be a chief of a tribe or whatever, succeed the late chief, go and examine, are you doing it in the cultural way or not? If not, leave it. Because you will not succeed. You will not succeed with me. I'm brought up in a culture and customary way. So don't come to me with court papers. I'm not going to stay in that court. If it's a court of the dispute of a chieftainship, we shall handle it within a given traditional authority, not in the court of law. So, I want to plead that traditional authorities that have recognized chiefs and leaders should help those that want to go astray. Bring them back home. Having said those few words, I know the media might not get everything. It's not written here. I want to repeat. We are celebrating at the traditional authority here. And we have to learn to respect our elders, the young people, the youth. The youth that was here was saying, if you don't know where you come from, you don't know where you are going. That is the simple language I got. Therefore, for us to know where we come from, let us lead our elder people. When the Fumu who is here was telling me the year I was born, he was already in Moscow, he frightened me. That means we have a reserve of knowledge here. Let's step with, so that by the time he goes to his ancestors, he's empty. Because they've taken away everything from him. And if we do that, we shall be sure in ensuring him that even if he's no more with us, he leaves us in the right direction. Fumu, I want to plead. Don't get tired of disciplining us as your children. You have a duty to direct us. Community Director of Proceedings, I have said what I wanted to say this afternoon. Let's celebrate our independence with responsibility.
This is on the Reader News Bulletin. We take a trip to the marketplace. We have yet more news coming your way, so stay tuned.
Olio mnangeshefa noahara kushivifa oma akuroe kupitira mohorike radio station aweyo Eagle FM. Enya mkuro olongaha. Ninge kwa tafano na Monica kushikondosho ipindi konorahi tatu imwe, heari imwe, ne heari, imwe imwe nohamano. That is 0817147116. Mwambirewa konorahi tatu natu, mbali ohe tatu vatatu, ne nola no natu. Ninge tumo emaila ku monica@eaglefm.com.na. Opo umone oshijemo shiri nawa.
Eagle FM, the eye.
In a decisive response to wave of horrific crimes, the Namibian police force assumed full operational control of Okahandje following the gruesome murders of three young girls in the town over the past month. President Netumbo Nandi-Ndaitwah announced the intervention during a high-level visit to the town on Sunday, aiming to restore safety and order. Speaking to the nation and the people of Okahandje, President Nandi-Ndaitwah urged residents to cooperate fully with law enforcement authorities, stating that the police would take all necessary actions to ensure public safety. Okahandje is now under full operation of the Namibian Police Force until we restore some level of comfort and safety, she declared. The president arrived in Okahandje alongside a high-powered government delegation, which included Gender and Child Welfare Minister Emma Kantema, Education Minister Sanet Steenkamp, Home Affairs and Safety Minister Lucia Ipumbu, Justice and Labor Relations Minister Wise Emmanuel, and Health Minister Esperance Luvidao. The team was tasked with assessing the situation and formulating urgent safety and support interventions. The president's visit came in the wake of nationwide outrage following the rape and murder of three minors, Losarind Ndinelao Fabian, 6 years old, Ingrid Mastrop, who is 5 years old, and Beyonce Kaukas, 15 years old, all residents of Okahandje. The brutal nature of the crimes sparked fear and anger within the community and across the country. A community address was held at 1500 hours at the Now Abbey Sports Stadium, where President Nandi-Ndaitwah listened to the concerns of residents and outlined the government's planned response. She reassured citizens that justice would be pursued with urgency and that psychological support and enhanced policing would be immediately implemented. Authorities confirmed that further directives would be issued by law enforcement as part of a broader strategy to stabilize the community and prevent further tragedies. Let's now hear from President Netumbo Nandi-Ndaitwah on what she said at the sports stadium in Okahandje.
Child, to be happy, waking up in the morning and demanding to go to school. I don't want a Namibian child to be in the school but scared, not knowing what will happen when the school closes on that particular day. And let this be our responsibility. So, as from now, basically started yesterday, the police or law enforcement have taken over Okahanja. They have taken over Okahanja until the time we feel there is some level of comfort among the citizens. Because as you are there now, you are traumatized, you are afraid, so therefore, that's why the police have to take over Okahanja. And then the police, they want, no, you should give them their cooperation. Your cooperation. I'm now asking you to cooperate fully with the law enforcement. They will tell you what is the do's and the do not. And you need to comply. Everything is done for your own protection. Even if they say by 8 o'clock you must be in your room, you must be in your house. They are going to give you their details. It's not me to give you, but they are working on the details. I'm just telling you and appealing to you to cooperate with them. All is done for your interest. All is done is in the interest of the Namibian child. And we must all protect them. Our schools must be safe places for a Namibian child. And with me here, I have a team of ministers who will be working with the mayor and the governor just to assess the situation and see what can be done to ensure that a Namibian child in Okahanja and everywhere in Namibia, they are safe when they go to schools. So they are being coordinated by the Prime Minister. You have seen the Prime Minister when he introduced me.
And now for a commercial break, but we'll be back with economic tradings that are making headlines today.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Welcome back, and now for some trading economics. On agricultural commodities, the top commodity losers are cheese at -4.51%, with palm oil coming in at -2.42%, and wheat at -1.47%. Gains are led by orange juice at 2.17%. On metal commodities, the top commodity losers are lithium bicarbonate at -1.36%, gold at -1.07%, and copper at -0.62%. Gains are led by steel rebar at 0.95%, platinum at 0.82%, and iron ore at 0.71%. On energy commodities, the top commodity gainers are natural gas at 1.02%, natural gas UK GBP at 1.01%, natural gas EU Dutch at 0.79%, and crude oil WTI at 0.07%, with blend crude oil at 0.04%. Spain's jobless rate rises higher, more than expected in the first quarter. Now, Spain's unemployment rate rose to 11.36% in the first quarter of 2025, up from 10.61% in the previous quarter, that is marking the highest level in a year and above market expectations of 10.7%, the number of unemployment increased by 193,700 to 2,789 million, while employment fell by 92,500 to 2,176 million. China vows more support for exporters and pledges contingency plans. Now, Chinese officials promised more support for exporters hit by the U.S. President Trump's tariffs. At a briefing on Monday, Beijing outlined policies to aid struggling exporters, including ensuring access to loans and boosting domestic consumption to offset the impact of U.S. levies. It was the most detailed response since the start of Trump's second term, as shipments to the U.S. continue to fall. Now, officials also stated that China was fully prepare contingency plans and constantly improve the policy kit for stabilizing employment and the economy. The largely repeated vows last week by the decision-making portfolio led by President Xi Jinping to prepare for external shocks. Lithuania retail sales growth slows in March. Retail sales in Lithuania has increased by 0.1% year-on-year in March 2025, slowing from a downwardly revised 2.1% growth in the previous month. Now, this marked the softest rise in retail trade since January 2024, primarily due to a decline in sales of food, beverages and tobacco at minus 4.2% versus 1.9% in February. Additionally, sales of automotive fuel fell further, dropping by 12.4% compared to a 9.5% decrease in the previous month. Meanwhile, sales accelerated slightly for non-food products at 10.3% versus 8.4% and other retail sales at non-specified stores at 31.9% versus 30.8%. On a monthly basis, retail sales edged up by 0.9% following a 0.8% increase in February. And that's what we had for you on economic indicators. Let's now pause here, and when we do return, we'll be bringing you what's happening beyond the borders of Namibia.
Back your preconceptions of technology. Explore the apps that are redefining the future. Out with the old and in with the new. From carrying physical hard copy hymn books to the world of digital hymn book versions. See the bold new expressions of the Imba app. Feel like you're part of something bigger. Experience the digital hymn book in the palm of your hands. Behold, the new and improved Imba that brings together various hymn books under one app. Here to unite a nation and spread the gospel. Some of the featured hymn books on Imba app are the Elsi Nehangano, the Osherero Omaimburiro, the Catholic Simane Kakarunga, the Afrikaans Sing Voor Dierra, and many more. Contact us today if you'd like for your church hymn book to be added onto the list of Imba hymn books. 081-23-58-063. You can also email us at digital@omalaiti.com. Download and discover Imba today. You can find it on the App Store as well as the Google Play Store.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back, and now we take you to news beyond the borders. Of course, we start off regionally, then we move to continental news, thereafter international news. And meanwhile, in South Africa, disaster management officials and volunteers activated to assist with relief efforts in the Tokai fire.
And we start in the city of Cape Town, where the Disaster Risk Management Center says that officials and volunteers have been activated to assist the fire services to coordinate relief efforts in the Silver Mine section of the Table Mountain National Park, and that's between Tukai and Noordhoek in the Southern Peninsula. The fire broke out on Friday. Vanessa Puna is there standing by to give us an update. Vanessa, good morning. And of course, you know, spoke to Joel Guy this morning because we're hoping that the weather conditions would at least be able to assist that situation. But greater deployment, please bring us up to speed with the latest.
Yes, good morning to you. And I'm at the Lakeside Fire Station here in the South Peninsula this morning with Jermaine Carlson, who's the spokesperson for the City of Cape Town's Fire and Rescue Services. This, of course, is the Incident Command Center for this fire and also the drop-off spot for donations. We've seen donations streaming in this morning for those fire people who are on the front lines battling this blaze. We do know that there have been evacuations. You've said so just now, just almost 200 households that have been evacuated. And just for an update in terms of what had happened overnight, we'll speak to Jermaine to get the latest, but we do know that one firefighter has sustained injuries. Jermaine, good morning to you. Of course, you have had your hands full over the past 2 days in terms of this fire. First, let's start with the injury to the firefighter. What had transpired and what is the condition at this point in time?
Yeah, I think the firefighter sustained injury late last night, just after midnight, and she was taken to a nearby hospital. They're taking good care of her, obviously, and we're monitoring that situation.
So this fire started on Friday. We understand that it flared yesterday due to weather conditions. What is the status and what had transpired overnight?
Yeah, as you alluded to, it started on Friday evening about 9:30, I think. And then on Saturday, it took a turn for the worst. The wind came up, the fire jumped over old cops over there. And now we're sitting with a fire that stretches the long side from Tukai all the way up to Fishuklo Valley, Kalk Bay area, and then on the other side down to Noordhoek side. But we've got an extensive amount of firefighters on scene, not only city firefighters, but Table Mountain National Parks, NCC, as well as volunteer wildfire services. So this is a collaboration of different agencies working towards a common goal to extinguishing this blaze. And hopefully the weather aids us today. We've got cooler weather this morning, but I think later on when the mist evaporates, then we'll have our hands full with the wind obviously changing as well.
Yesterday, fire aerial bombing taking place. What's expected with helicopters today?
Yes, with First Light, they've made an assessment. 4 choppers are on standby. Yesterday, it was 5 choppers that was water bombing through the entire day. But today, with First Light, Table Mountain National Park will make an assessment, and then they'll start with water bombing the areas.
And then we know that there have been evacuations of Noordhoek Manor, those 48 frail care residents as well. Have there been any further evacuations overnight in terms of the areas that have been affected by heavy smoke, etc.?
Yeah, no, there were no further evacuations. Only the estates, the residents on the estates of Barnyard as well as Silverstein, they took it upon themselves to evacuate that area. But I think they're back at their homes.
The G20 Agriculture Group tackles climate-driven food crisis with technology and investment.
Ismail Amin's journey into Tuli cattle farming was met with high feed costs, water and electricity shortages, and disruptive weather patterns gathering over KwaZulu-Natal in South Africa. The province has become wetter and prone to flooding in the last 10 years, something Amin has had to navigate carefully to stay in business.
We're living in a difficult time of climate change, and we've had to adapt and change our types of farming and our methods of farming with climate change. So we're dealing with more precision farming. The Tuli is a big part of my success in farming with climate change because they are adaptable and they do well in most areas.
The young farmer has turned to regenerative farming and technology to better monitor and manage operations.
Collecting data, analyzing this data, and watching the changes helps us make these decisions and inform decisions when we're doing our farming practices. And this way, It's not just a rational decision and it's calculated so that, you know, we can mitigate these risks and still be productive in the long run.
KwaZulu-Natal often reaches scorching temperatures when the rain dries up. Nearby Ubora Farm finds technology a big help to monitor its chicken flock, which are highly sensitive to changing conditions.
We record everything that we do on a daily basis, and that definitely does help us to track the patterns. If there's any problems, we can see it, we can pick it up immediately. For instance, you know, if we know that every day we are collecting 100 eggs, and then all of a sudden, you know, tomorrow we're collecting maybe 40 eggs, then we know there's a problem.
Data-driven and tech solutions in the face of relentless climate change were topics on the table at the G20 Agricultural Working Group, taking place 300 kilometers away from the farms, in the port city of Durban, which itself has been battered by waves of flooding.
We need to look at how we build resilience, and it is a reality, it's going to be with us, and it focuses then on new breeding techniques, how you build and breed new crops that are more climate resilient, and also how you use farming methods to ensure that you're more environmentally sensitive to what you are trying to do.
South Africa's G20 leadership and BRICS membership also opens doors for African farmers in new markets.
We believe to increase the market exposure for African agriculture exports and investment opportunities, because we need investment in African agriculture to be able to increase efficiencies, modernization, commercialization, so we can then in turn access markets such as China, India, and of course even some of our trade partners in Europe.
The G20's work is of critical importance, especially to Africa, where 1 in 5 people have no food. Adding to that is the impact of climate change already ravaging crops and livestock and threatening food security. The way forward is through a meaningful partnership and investment to build Africa's agricultural sector, not to feed just its own, but to also supply the world. Jilishara CHTN, Johannesburg.
The 39th Tunis International Book Fair is underway with China as a guest of honor.
Tunisian President Kais Saied inaugurated the Tunis International Book Fair. The head of state visited the Chinese pavilion, where he expressed strong support for the concept of building a community with a shared future for mankind, proposed by Chinese President Xi Jinping.
This is a big event. It's the first time that China is the guest of honor of this international book fair.
China's participation as a guest of honor is a valuable opportunity for Tunisian literary enthusiasts, bibliophiles, and publishing experts to learn about Chinese culture, arts, and heritage.
Walid Ahmed Ferchichi is a renowned Tunisian poet who has also translated and published hundreds of books. He says visitors have been better informed and many of them even impressed by China's pavilion.
Today, we are living in a world where culture has become an element of economic growth. This pavilion is a witness to China's greatness as a country and a culture. Tunisia's and China's cultures can be complementary in many aspects.
Mortez Boularas is a Chinese language student at the prestigious University of Carthage in Tunis. He is exploring language learning books. Mortez is also amazed with China's ancient and modern history manuals.
Learning Chinese has paved the way for discovering China's rich history. It was my field of study before becoming my passion. It's an enjoyable journey.
Hiba Zawem and her friends are fans of Chinese animated works, which are based on traditional as well as modern Chinese literature.
China is a great country. The Chinese dragon is waking up, and culture is a manifestation of this power. This is an opportunity to dive into Chinese culture by reading literature and watching animated works.
In recent years, with deepening academic exchanges between China and Tunisia, thousands of students have acquired better language skills. Many Chinese students in Tunis are also promoters of increased cultural and academic exchanges between the two sides.
I think that this initiative has brought people together. I'm learning Arabic, and my Tunisian friends are learning Chinese. This is an excellent way to initiate dialogue between our two cultures.
The Chinese Pavilion at the Tunis International Book Fair, which spans more than 500 square meters, has been hosting intellectual seminars and dialogue sessions that bring together Chinese writers with their Tunisian, Arab, and African counterparts. Over 100 Chinese cultural figures are attending the fair, representing 40 Chinese publishing houses. Adnan Shawishi, CGTN, Tunis.
And now that has brought us to the conclusion of today's episode of On the Radar News Bulletin. To stay tuned for the Onkonana Dengi program brought to you by David Shombe, the Home Run Show with Dwight and Helmut at 16:30. Also, do stay tuned to our Facebook media platforms and other media platforms where you can get all the news that is making headlines right here within the borders of Namibia and outside the borders of Namibia. Do download the Eagle FM app on Eagle FM Namibia, that is on Play Store or Google Play Store. Now from Indafa, happy Juju, it is goodbye and I'll see you again tomorrow for another episode of News Bulletin right here on the Radar.
Did you know that in Namibia, over 1.4 million people use their mobile device to access the internet? So why not meet your current and potential customers where they already are? With over 600,000 cumulative users around the world, between the Eagle FM and Imba mobile apps, Eagle Media House has the perfect digital platforms for you to advertise your business, upcoming events, weddings, vacancies, funerals, or any other announcement that you have on their digital billboards in their mobile applications. Put your ad on our digital billboards and with one tap of the screen, lead users directly to an address of your choosing. For more information, contact Hende at 081-410-9077. That's 081-410-9077.
Oulio mnangeshefa na wahara kushivifa oma kuroe kupitira mohorike radio station awayo Eagle FM. Enya mkuro olongaha. Ninge kwa tafano na Monica kushikondosha ipindi kono raheta tuimwe, heari imwe, ne heari, imwe imwe no hamano. That is 0817147116. Mwamberewa kono raheta tu natu, mbali o heta tu vatatu, ne no la no natu. Ninge tumo emaila ku monica@eaglefm.com.na. Opo umone oshijemo shiri nawa.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Back your preconceptions of technology. Explore the apps that are redefining the future. Out with the old and in with the new. From carrying physical hard copy hymn books to the world of digital hymn book versions. See the bold new expressions of the Imba app. Feel like you're part of something bigger. Experience the digital hymn book in the palm of your hands. Behold, the new and improved Imba that brings together various hymn books under one app. Here to unite a nation and spread the gospel. Some of the featured hymn books on Imba app are the Elsi Nehangano, the Osherero Omaimburiro, the Catholic Simane Kakarunga, the Afrikaans Sing Voor Diere, and many more. Contact us today if you'd like for your church hymn book to be added onto the list of Imba hymn books. 081-23-58-063. You can also email us at digital@omalaiti.com. Download and discover Imba today. You can find it on the App Store as well as the Google Play Store.